Who win it now? Welcome to the Pride of Detroit podcast, PODcast. It's called that for a reason. Pride of Detroit, POD, Detroit Lions, your NFL team. And we're here. We're here for you, Detroit Lions fans, as your team goes 500, two wins in a row now. What is up? Back home to LA, Rams. This is fun. This is fun.
They went straight to England. They didn't even get to go home and wallow in their tears.
They went straight to the UK. Okay. I'm sorry. I'm feeling good. I don't know how you guys are feeling. Let's get everyone introduced, though. I'm Chris Lemieux at Detroit Southern on Twitter. That voice you just heard, fearless leader Jeremy Reisman at Detroit Online, managing editor. He's the man who runs the show. He's the face that runs the place. And Ryan Matthews is here. Black is the
motherfucking rock guy. What's going on,
Ryan underscore POD?
Oh, yeah, hey, damn it. I jumped in the middle of my plug. I feel like such a jerk. I'm sorry. I'm just so anxious because today is the day.
Today's a very special day. We're going to explain why later in the show, but you got a very special day and we're going to talk about it later. But we need to talk about Lions first and clear up everything there. Alex Reno is also here at Alex underscore Reno. What's up?
How's it going, guys?
Okay, guys, Lions are 500. Lions have beat the Los Angeles Rams, and I gotta say, this is now two games in a row that's almost been a cardiac attack. I don't know if this is healthy to have, but I am entertained, to say the least.
Most entertaining team in the business.
This is why we cover the Lions, because, you know, look, they're not that great of a team. They're not, but you know what? What's fun? We're going to have games like this where it's just like, oh, wow, everything is going wrong. Everything is going wrong. Something is going right. Something is going right. And then depending what happens at the end, that either goes right or wrong.
I think that's 6-1 score games, right?
Yeah.
And two games now sealed by an interception. Two in a row.
Yeah, the defense has sucked, but at least they're coming up with the big plays at the end. But we'll get into that later.
Big play Bush this time. Big play Bush.
Never would have thought.
A lot of Bush. A lot of Cooter.
Oh, no. No Johnson.
No Johnson. He's still not playing. He's still dancing with the stars, right?
Yeah, you've stopped covering that now. Although I know ESPN's Michael Rothstein, he's still out there. He's still going hard. He is right now tweeting through. Actually, I just found his last tweet. Let's read this on air. So this is Michael Rothstein at Mike Rothstein. He's kind of the ESPN reporter for the Lions. He's a fun guy. We have fun with him. We like Mike. We like Mike here. We really like Mike. I'm not saying that joking. We do like Mike. Okay, this tweet is, though, well, it's Latin night on Dancing with the Stars, and Pitbull is on the show. So Calvin Johnson can compete with that tonight.
Wow, sounds like it's going to be muy caliente tonight. Dancing with the Stars.
Okay, real quick.
You would have been perfect to write this next piece. I don't know why you gave it up, man.
All right, one more piece of housekeeping to do. God damn it.
I started to enjoy it too much. That's why, Jeremy. That's why I had to give it up.
One more piece of housekeeping before we move on to talking about the Lions. We do have shirts now. Pride to Detroit is now... We sell shirts. We now have a Jim Bob Cooter for President t-shirt where we've partnered with Breaking Tea. Is that was the name of the company? Jeremy, yep. Can you explain this?
Yeah, we kind of had tried to get this off the ground a couple years in a row, but things fell through the cracks. But thanks to some of your writers and editors, we came up with a list of ideas. This is just going to be the first that we roll out, but we have a t-shirt based on the van that Golden Tate found that had Jim Bob Cooter for President on the back. So we have a nice black shirt that has a van on it and says Jim Bob Cooter for President. Pretty dope, I think, honestly, because everyone hates the election right now. Everyone loves Jim Bob Cooter. Why wouldn't you get this shirt?
I love the selection. It's so stupid. I love it.
Get out of here.
All right, let's actually talk about the Lions, though. So once again, 500 now, 3-3, rebounding now with two straight, and also rebounding in this game. I think this is probably where I want to lead off is Golden Tate had himself quite the day.
That he did. And no sooner could it have come, because I was getting pretty sick of this. I didn't think Golden Tate had really lost a step, or maybe he was frustrated, but not. I don't think that was really impacting his performance. I mean, the offense was clicking all year except for in the Bears game. So to me, the fact that he wasn't getting his wasn't a big deal. Now that he has gotten his, maybe we can stop hearing about it.
Yeah, 8 receptions off of 10 targets, tied in receptions for the day with Anquan Boldin, 165 yards. So averaging just over about 20.5 per se. Per reception, 1 touchdown, that long for 61 where he just kind of danced down the sideline, found the end zone, kissed the cam, and then got the pom-poms out. He had himself quite the day. So I think, can we finally put that to bed? This whole Golden Tate is kind of mental or something like that. That seems.
Yeah, but he dropped the pass too.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess.
No, I'm kidding. Jesus. He did fine. He did great.
But Marvin Jones only had 10 yards.
Yeah, because I think people are realizing you got to bottle up Marvin Jones now over Golden Tate. I think during the first 5 games of the year, I think this probably has a lot to do with why Tate was kind of struggling, is that people were treating Golden Tate as the number one, putting the top receivers on, I mean, the top defensive backs on him.
I just think Marvin Jones doesn't care anymore.
Oh, God. He had a touchdown.
He had a touchdown. That's what I was going to say. He still found the end zone. So I was pretty impressed with Golden Tate. And, you know, I think he actually even got a carry out of the backfield. And that's not entirely surprising when the team's first string, second string, and third string running backs are all not playing. But maybe we should talk about that running game for a little bit. What about Zach Center? Hey, how you doing?
14 carries, 58 yards. Not great. Just over about 4 yards a carry, but you know what? I'll take it at this point.
Yeah, that's good for what we've seen in the past, for sure.
I say they definitely got by, and he had one of the most important plays of the entire day. That 19-yard carry on 1st and 20 when the team was backed up after a false start penalty.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, the draw play.
Yep.
He also had 2 receptions out of the backfield too. Like he got about 20 yards receiving from some really high lobs from Stafford, but he went up there and got them.
You know what? I think him touching the ball 16 times, if you would have told me he was going to touch the ball 16 times in this game, I wouldn't have been too excited about it. I honestly thought that Justin Forsett was going to get a little bit more involved, but maybe that was just me not trusting Zenner enough and kind of overestimating how ready Forsett would be, because I know he looked a little rough. I know a lot of people were commenting on, like, his first run, people were already like, oh, ship him out. Too much dancing in the backfield. I was like, all right, you know, at least Cooter, like, runs plays that, you know, accentuates, you know, the offense's strengths. And when Forsett, it seems like he's best used, you know, sweeping out left or right. And, you know, I don't know. I thought he looked fine. He was a guy who was playing on, what, a half a week's prep?
Yeah, right. Pretty much.
Yeah.
I think they picked him on Tuesday. I'm not sure I agree with you all on Zenner. He had a couple good plays, but I really wasn't that impressed with the Lions running game at all.
I thought he was getting some pretty big holes from the offensive line.
Really? I saw it on a couple carries, and my expectations were very low, so they probably exceeded my expectations a little bit. What really is surprising to me is looking at that box score and seeing that Zenner had the exact same stat line as Todd Gurley. Exact same. Same amount of carries, same amount of yards. That, to me, that is not what I saw in the game. But
well, that's because what happened in the second half? The Rams realized, oh, we can throw the ball at will against the Lions, so why even hand the ball off to Todd Gurley? Because, you know, watching the first half, it was like, God, you know, every time Gurley was getting the ball, it was six yards, 5 yards, 7 yards. It was just like,
He started the game, first handoff was what, a 15-yard breakout?
Yeah, and it seemed like it was going to be a long day, and I understand why they went away from it, because Case Keenum was just having the day of his life. And, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I hate to get down to this already, but, you know, we might as well bring this up right now. So I have a tweet here from Dave Burkett from the Detroit Free Press. Just comparing what happened, just kind of how kind of the day and night goes. So Matt Stafford, who I think we can say right now, Matt Stafford's playing at just an unconscious level for him. This is like 2011 type numbers for
better.
Him. Better? Is it better than 2011 right now?
I think so.
Well,
I mean, I think
his quarterback rating's above 100 and he's never hit that mark.
His quarterback rating is higher. His yards per attempt is higher. His completion percentage is higher.
Wow. And again, all without Calvin Johnson.
But the narrative.
Just got to keep remembering narrative. That. You just got to. What a narrative that got blown up, too, that Matt Stafford would be nobody without Calvin Johnson. I even thought he would take at least a little step back, but it just hasn't happened. It hasn't.
You know, I know we're getting to a different topic, but one thing that people always complained about Matthew Stafford was that he never made the people around him better. Well, he's been without his second leading target for the last two games. He was without his third leading target last game, and he's lighting up the scoreboard still. He's making, you know, everyone think that Marvin Jones is a legit number one, whether he is or he isn't. He's, you know, he's made Golden Tate look like a number one at times. He's making the people around him better.
He got a reception to Clay Harbor.
There you go.
I mean,
that happened.
He was just so good, too. I mean, like, what? He had 8 incompletions. 5 of them were drops.
The only bad decision I saw him make was that. So what was it? It was 3rd down and he had like green fields right in front of him. He could have gone wheels.
Yeah. Threw it to the opposite field. That was bad.
Sidearm across his body. That was the only like, Matt, what are you doing throw of the day I saw from him.
Yeah, it was. And then on replay, I noticed that Mark Barron was kind of lurking there. So I guess Stafford just didn't feel like running over any Rams defenders this week.
Yeah, but that's Matthew Stafford. I mean, you're always going to get at least one bad throw. But the thing is, he's been way more consistent with his other throws, which has made him so much better.
I'm just so happy that we can finally break away from the Matthew Stafford and Jay Cutler are like the same guy. Like the whole idea of like, two gunslingers in the NFC North.
No, I mean, Stafford has shown an incredibly cerebral side to him. There's no denying that. And I think we're going to have to talk about this probably throughout the podcast and maybe even a little later, just on like where to really put him right now. But yeah, it's just, yeah, it's something special. It's really special.
It's impressive.
Yeah. But yeah. This is kind of the contrast, though, that Dave Burkett's bringing up. So Matt Stafford, who, again, unconscious this year, completing, quote, Matt Stafford is completing 68.9% of his passes with 4 touchdowns and 4 interceptions on this year. Opposing quarterbacks, though, are 73.7%, 17 touchdowns and 3 interceptions versus Detroit.
Man, that's real bad.
We had this talk about Brian Hoyer during the Bears game. Guess whose time it was this week? It was Case Keenum's time to shine. What was it? 19 consecutive completions? Broke the Rams record? Finishes the day with 27 out of 32?
Matthew Stafford.
What was his rating?
I think it was in the high 120s, but I think it was 126 or something. But like, Matthew Stafford is the second best quarterback in the league right now, and the first best is whoever's playing the Lions. It's ridiculous.
Don't we play the Saints this year?
Yes.
Oh my yep. God.
I don't even want to see what Drew Brees is going to do to our defense, man.
Maybe 600 yards. It's in play.
It's going to look like Lamar Jackson. It's going to look like Lamar Jackson when we play Drew Brees.
Like, his stats this year are crazy, too. I don't know, man.
At least we don't play Atlanta. I said we play Dallas too, and that's just as bad looking right now.
Well, it depends if you get Dak Prescott or Tony Romo. Well,
yeah, and that's a balanced offense too. I mean, our running defense isn't all that good, and we're gonna have Zeke running all over us too. I mean, it's just gonna be a disaster.
Yeah, the other thing too, though, is I mean, you can say those numbers from Burkett, but the eye test when I watched the game, there was no question that Matthew Stafford was the better quarterback.
Oh, absolutely. All those Case Keenum throws, it was because there was a guy just sitting there. There's a Rams receiver just sitting there in the middle of the field, 10, 12 yards down from the line of scrimmage. And there's not a Lions linebacker anywhere in the frame.
Well, yeah, because Thurston Armbrister is trying to get off the field.
Thurston Armbrister's got his back turned to the quarterback. He's just like running like he's got a turd in the back of his pants. I don't know what he's doing out there, man.
Hey, but he did just fine on special teams.
He did. He made at least one tackle.
He's got to stay on special teams.
There's that.
That's where we're at with this defense, and that's what's pretty much keeping it. And I think that's why a lot of people are arguing. It's like, look, if this defense was even remotely a little better, like, this Lions team could be something special. But just like, Christ.
Why can't we have a great offense and then just like an average defense for once? We either have a good offense and a terrible defense, or a good defense and a terrible, like a Joe Lombardi led offense. It's just, I don't get why.
It's because we can't have nice things, right? Because we can't have nice
just
things.
Just imagine Matthew Stafford playing against the Lions defense.
Oh,
oh my God.
Oh, I would like to see that spring mock simulation game. That would be
no mock games. Oh, mock games. Right, we don't play mock games anymore.
You don't want to do a Breaking Madden and have Matthew Stafford versus the Lions?
Matthew Stafford versus a team of Thurston Armbristers.
Oh, there you go.
I mean, it's not just him too. Kyle Van Noy did not look good on the day either.
Tahir Whitehead didn't look good either.
Whitehead did not look good either.
The linebackers are god-awful. And that's why there could be help around the corner. There could be two guys that come back this week, potentially.
I'm going to have to eat crow on Tahir Whitehead, because I was calling him one of the better linebackers in the NFL.
Oh, man.
When he was with Levy, but...
Did you vote for him as defensive player of the year?
No, God, no, I did not do that. I did not screw it up, but I did vote for Ansa, and he hasn't done shit either.
Yeah, Chris Spielman, of course, was talking about this is the Ziggy effect, and it's like making them, get two false start penalties. But I'm like, yeah, you know, no, the Ziggy effect is sacking people, and he's not doing that.
Yeah, I mean, even if this defense was a shade below, maybe below average, I would just have so much more faith in this team, but it's just bad. I don't think that there's a defense that's worse in the league.
There isn't. Like, by the numbers, there it's isn't. Bad. Like, this is by Football Outsiders, like, by and away, the worst defense in the league at nearly everything. Like, I'm pretty... Yeah, 32 overall for DVOA, 31st in pass ranking, 28th in rush ranking.
And it's probably going to get worse. That doesn't include this week. And we've just played one of the worst offenses in the league, and... They punted what, once?
And made Case Keenum... My joke on Twitter was, boy, it would be really funny if Case Keenum got a big contract off of this game. Thankfully, people picked up on what I was talking about, but that just seems so characteristic of the Lions. Like, just, you know, make Brian Hoyer and Matt Flynn and Case Keenum look like all-stars.
Guys, Ansa has 3 tackles on the year and 0 sacks in 3 games.
No. Yeah. 2 games in 1 series.
Okay. All right. Still.
One last thing, and then we need to move on. We need to talk about the kneel down scruff up.
Let's do it. Let's get mad.
So, okay. We need to update this a little bit. We wrote about this, at the end of the game, Travis Swanson potentially got hurt because... There was some pushing and shoving, and then it could have been worse. On that first kneel down, the video showed like one of the Rams pushed Laken Tomlinson so hard he like fell onto Matt Stafford and he came up hobbling. And when I saw that on replay, I like held my breath. Like I know nothing bad happened from it, but even watching it, I'm like, oh no, oh no, oh no, oh no. But we need to get like. I think as we pointed out in the article, this was a favorite tactic of Greg Schiano. And it's not like the Rams are apparently foreign to this dirty stuff because Greg Williams is their defensive coordinator. But what was the update from Jeff Fisher? He said like the final 2 plays, that order didn't come from the sidelines, which granted, of course, he would say that. But then he also said that like this was retaliation for what, quote, Aaron Donald went through.
Did we ever figure out what that meant?
No, I don't think so. Other than like maybe Aaron Donald was mad that they were double teaming him all day, which is like, yeah, if you're up against Aaron Donald, you fucking double team him. I don't know what you want.
Yeah, I don't. I feel like Jeff Fisher wouldn't say that just if Aaron Donald had a rough day at the office and was getting double teamed and getting extra attention.
He's got to be getting double teamed every week.
Yeah, yeah. Something must have happened in the trenches.
Well, yeah, there is probably something that's going on. But you know what? All's fair in love and war. And to stop Aaron Donald, you have to probably do some things that aren't so well, you know, well spirited and well meaning.
Maybe our
so.
Maybe our offensive linemen were untying his shoe after the play was over and all that stuff.
Yeah, here's a full quote from Fisher. It says, quote, "I think it was a byproduct of frustration, some things that Aaron endured during the game, and the players took it on themselves to do it." So, and he also said it's not something that they preach.
Well, okay, so this is a thing, though, with Aaron Donald. I mean, did the video show that Aaron Donald was one who was...
It's hard to tell from the sideline.
You know, it's hard to tell. I don't think he went low. I don't think he went low, but he definitely, like, you know, he's one of those Rams just kind of like, again, like, as I point out, you just don't do this. You don't go pushing and shoving like that.
Well, hold on. I mean, I guess, you know, the point I'm trying to make is that the very first game of the year, Monday night, Aaron Donald, he had a temper problem too and lost his you know what and right. Got ejected from the game.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah. So
this could be the second incident within a year. And man, Lions fans, aren't you happy we didn't get Aaron Donald and the Ndamukong Suh 2.0? We don't need that kind of bad attitude on our team, right?
I don't think he did though, if we're being serious. Here's a tweet from Dave Burkett. He said, "Aaron Donald went hard at Lakin Tomlinson on first kneel down, but did not go low." So that's nothing to me.
I just think Lakin Tomlinson, kind of a, you know, sophomore thing. Like, it's like, I'm not ready for a guy to bull rush me on a kneel down.
So this brings up an interesting point. First of all, there's whether going hard on a kneel down is breaking any sort of unwritten rule.
I'm not having that. It's breaking unwritten rules.
So if it's not breaking any rules, do you think there should be a rule? Is it really worth it to have these plays happen when there's more of a risk of an injury than there is a risk of a fumble?
Yeah, I mean, look, like, people talk about this with the intentional walk in baseball, but like, you probably don't get hurt intentionally walking a batter. Like, you just don't.
And so, Major League Baseball did away with the intentional walk.
Did they? Is it just you put up four fingers and you walk?
Is that starting next year?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think so. Yeah. So yeah. Why when you have a situation like this where it's like you can kneel down to stop the clock, like, why can't we just have that there? It's like, okay, you know, kill the clock and you win.
That's what I'm proposing. Is that something you guys would like, or do you think the offense needs to go through the motions?
Absolutely. No, absolutely. They should have that. I don't care if it happened one time in like a Tampa. Was it Tampa in New York where it's like Tampa jumped over the kneel down and forced a turnover? But that's like one time out of like how many victory formations? Like it just doesn't happen. And it's no good. It's no good, especially when your starting center is potentially injured now because some guy got his panties in a bunch.
Well, I don't. Go ahead, Ryan.
Well, I mean. Go ahead, Alex.
Okay, I was gonna say I don't have a problem with the going hard part, but I mean, I think it was Dominic Easley, Burkett also tweeted, is the one that went low, and I don't think you should be going low and attacking the knees of the players in a victory formation. I think that's pretty dirty.
All right, let's leave it there. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're gonna talk about more of the state of this team right now. The Lions are 500. We have some thoughts about that. And we want to talk about what could or could not be with the record. And we're going to preview Washington, next opponent on the schedule. So stick around. We'll be right back. All right, continuing along here on the Pride of Detroit podcast, I have to apologize to Ryan Matthews. I accidentally cut him off there. I had completely forgotten that he had a turn. He wanted to dust something up, Ryan. So please, by all means, say your piece.
Chris, I'm not offended in any way whatsoever, just to make that clear.
I'm sorry. Trying to remove it. I'm trying.
So I think it's a tricky line that you have to toe with whether or not you should just award the team that now has the ball and you're downing the football and you're eating time. I mean, do you do that? I know that Chris said on the off chance it's happened how many times where it's been a bobbled snap or something's gone wrong and there was actually a turnover and it did change the outcome of the game. But I just see the game as there's 60 minutes. All of the time should be on the field should be played as hard as it, you know, you should go as hard as, you know, you go in the first quarter or the fourth quarter when there isn't any time left or there might be a chance that you might get a turnover. The chances are slim, but it can still happen. That's why I was kind of, you know, to go back to the baseball thing, now that you can just, you know, throw up the four fingers and it's an intentional walk. Well, what's the chance that it's a, you know, that it's a wild pitch and it could advance other guys on base? You know,
that happened coming this back, year. Happened this year. And then, like, what was it? Miguel Cabrera, when he was, like, what, his second year in the league, he hit, like, a single into center field because right. some guy didn't throw a pitch out far enough.
Sure. And, you know, just to bring it back to football, mistakes happen. I'm just saying it. I'm not the biggest proponent of, well, the team has the ball and as long as they just run a couple plays, they should win the game because they have the ball and they're doing this certain type of formation that, you know, will guarantee them victory and you should let them do it. Like, you should just let them kneel the ball.
See, I get your point and I agree to you to some extent, but I don't really think the intentional walk thing is a good comparison because wild pitches do happen. Fumbled snaps on those very, very, very rarely happen. So to me, if there's a higher injury risk of injury on a play like that than there is of fumbling, I don't really think the play needs to be part of the game anymore.
I agree, and I think that's why it's just a tough situation because although it's very slim that you might fumble the football, I totally agree with you in the fact that at the end of the day, do we want to see a team that has Dan Orlovsky on it? Like, what if Matthew Stafford would have gotten, you know, hurt to the point where he would have missed time?
Right.
That just cheapens the product and makes it worse.
The NFL would have changed the rule like the next day right. if Stafford had gotten like torn his fucking MCL or something because of what they did there or something. I believe that, like, Goodell would have gone to like DEFCON 3 and be like, okay, we're changing this right now. Like, you know, if you have the ball with like a minute left, opponent's got no timeouts to stop you, just put up your hand and the game's over. Like, I really believe that but instead a center got hurt. And thankfully, Travis Swanson might not miss time at all. So that would be ideal.
We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. Okay, so Lions are now 3-3. Rough start there. Lost some games they probably shouldn't have. Won some games maybe they shouldn't have. But how do you guys overall, this is the question for this segment, how do you guys overall feel about the state of this team right now? Like, how do you feel about the record being 500 and comparing that with the talent on this team and how this team has played through the first six games of the season? Like, I don't know where I'm going with this. Is like, I've been really trying hard to get a good read on this team and who they are. Like, we keep talking about this. What's their identity? And I don't know if we really have one right now other than we seem to play incredibly close games.
I think at this point of the season, just to jump in real quick, it's tough to make much of who the Lions are by proximity of the teams that they beat. I'm not too sure if we know a whole lot about the teams they beat quite yet. I mean, the Eagles came in here and they were supposed to be world beaters and they were 3-0 riding high. Carson Wentz was, you know, the toast of the town. They had one of the best defenses in all of football, and now they've dropped two in a row, and they're 3-2. The Rams were 3-1. You know, they come in here after they, you know, lost a game last week, and now they're 500. It's just tough to make of, you know, it's tough to make anything of the Lions quite yet, I think, because I'm not too sure of who their opponents are. Are the Packers bad?
Aaron Rodgers certainly doesn't look like Aaron Rodgers.
Right. I think we know the Colts are bad, and that was a road. Any road victory is going to be a good victory, but
they collapsed so hard
against an awful, awful Houston team. I'm super excited for when they come to town, but then again, Brock Osweiler is going to look like he's probably worth $30 million that day. But
yeah, now the Rams are now lost two in a row, and they're going to be playing the Giants and the Panthers. And I know the Panthers are bad, but the Rams by the end of next Sunday could be have a losing record.
7-9.
7-9.
I just think
they could be 7-9 by next week.
They've never not been 7-9.
No, they've been 8-8 a few times.
They started the season 7-9.
But I think I've been saying this. I took it from somebody. I don't know who said it, but I think this is just a team that can beat anybody and can lose to anybody. That's who they are.
Especially with his defense. Like yeah. This, the Lions have right now, again, one of the better quarterbacks in the league. I still have to wait for the new Football Outsiders numbers on Matt Stafford, but he's certainly up there. Like just in efficiency, he's making this thing hum, but injuries have kind of hobbled the offense at times, but more than anything, it's just completely, I don't know if it's just injuries though. We're going to keep having this argument. Is it just injuries or is some of it Terrell Austin?
It's hard to tell now, but the one thing that I kind of buck against, which a lot of people I've seen say about the Lions, is that they've lost a few games that they shouldn't have. Now, obviously, you point to the Bears game first when you say something like that, and maybe it's true there, but this defense is really bad. I think they might be lucky to be 3-3, to be honest. If Matthew Stafford hadn't been perfect through 5 of the 6 games, this team wouldn't be 3-3. He's had to be perfect because this defense is that bad right now.
He's had to come from behind in all these victories, yeah. Right? Yeah.
Game winning kick within the last 2 minutes of each one of those three wins. That's
like
that's kind of lucky.
Stafford, Matt Stafford and Matt Prater have pretty much like bailed this team out how many times? Because the defense just can't get anything together. We were talking about the defense seeming to settle down against the Eagles last week too. And obviously I think like you had a couple of stops here, but again, like the fact that you just look at Case Keenum's box score, that's no good. That's just no good. Kenny Britt was like beating whoever had him on the corners. I don't know. Was that Nevin Lawson? But like Kenny Britt was just getting wide open all day.
He beat Darius Slay pretty bad too.
Yeah.
That secondary was not good. And this isn't a case where it's just like, oh, the box score is lying. You don't complete like 85% of your passes unless the defense is in shambles. And especially if your name is Case Keenum.
Right. And just to see some of those throws, I mean, they were wobbling. Like I've seen a fourth grader throw a football with better touch than Case Keenum on a couple of those throws.
Manning at the very end of his career, he was throwing nothing but ducks. His throws were still better than that.
Probably. It just shocks me. And, you know, for people who have optimism have an optimistic outlook for this team, just please temper it. Because, like we've said, Matthew Stafford has had to play A1, you know, the best game that he possibly could put together in order just to pull out these victories.
Yeah, I don't have much more to add to that. Absolutely. Like, it's been staggering watching him. And again, Matt Prater, too. Matt Prater's had to have some really clutch kicks. But, you know, Stafford puts him in those positions. He gets him pretty close. So
as long as Matt Prater doesn't have to kick a clutch extra point, he's great.
Yeah, we've also seen, by the way, and I forgot to touch on this last time, but we've also seen, and again, this isn't going to be popular, but we've seen Jim Caldwell kind of change how he's playing, calling fourth downs now.
Yeah.
Because he kind of knows he can't put it on his defense.
Yeah, don't jinx anything.
Right. But yeah, I don't know if that's the motivation or not, but that absolutely should be the motivation, that your defense is so bad.
I hope
that
it would be.
You need to get as many points out of every single possession as you possibly can. And now the Lions are, what, 6-for-6 on fourth downs right now?
Perfect. Perfect. Yeah.
It's smart. Anytime they're 4th-and-1, like almost at any point on the field, they should be going for it.
Yeah, it's just it's just baffling that, like, this is what it takes in the NFL to realize that going for it on fourth down is good when you just realize it's like, I can't trust anyone on that defense. But you know what? Kind of it gets to a good place, though, because, again, they're perfect on it. The math works in their favor, and they've just kind of been dragged kicking and screaming to this good statistical outcome so far.
I was just hoping that Jim Caldwell's latest programming update, where he now goes for it on fourth down all the time, wasn't going to override, and he wasn't going to go for it on fourth down on that final drive.
I want to talk about this because I think he should have.
I thought about it, and I was like, you know what?
Yeah, I really thought about it.
I was like, they could take the rest of the time off that clock and kick a field goal in the game and leave no time on the clock.
This was not a fourth and one. This was a fourth and inches.
I wanted points. I cannot agree with that. I know our defense sucks, but we could have, like, the way our power run game looked.
Have you seen Matthew Stafford not convert a quarterback sneak? I don't think I have. I could be wrong.
If you would have told me that for sure we would have gone for a QB sneak on fourth and inches, then maybe, but I don't know. I just, sometimes, as good as Cooter has been, he's made some mind-boggling play calls on
not on fourth down.
Yeah.
Perfect on fourth down.
Fourth down, he's been perfect.
Yeah, fourth down, he kind of goes to what's proven to work.
I wanted the points, man. I think
in my mind, I'm thinking this over, and I think the chances that we convert are much higher than our chances of our defense stopping them from driving for at least a field goal.
I don't think anybody could argue that.
Yeah, okay, but they didn't have any timeouts, and how much time was left? Like less than 50 seconds or something?
No, it was like a minute 20. They had like a minute and a half left. Yeah.
Nope. Still want the points.
Like, look, I understand. Like, it's, and look, I would say too, like, if the Lions go for it on fourth down and don't convert, doesn't mean it was a bad decision per se. It just means that it just doesn't working. I don't know. This is really hard to do the math on this, especially what you're talking about here.
I think Jim Caldwell called a perfect game, and you can fight me over that.
I think he did, except for his trick plays. Like, people, now that they've got film, I think you were right, whoever said that last time. Was it you, Jeremy? Now that they've got, like, film on it, people are just kind of anticipating.
Well, that's Cooter, though, I mean.
Yeah, true. All right, let's talk about Washington. Is it at, it's in Detroit, part of the home game stand. You have Washington coming to town. They are coming off now. They started 0-2, but now they have busted out four straight. Granted, a couple of those games are pretty close. 2-point game against the Giants. They just beat the Eagles by a touchdown, Ravens by 6 points. House the Browns, but that's the Browns. So, like, what do we think of the what do we think of Washington?
I can't figure out any NFC East teams ever. So I don't even know what to expect.
I think I kind of like our chances. I think, well, one, we're at home. Two, Kirk Cousins probably going to light us up, but he is also, and this is coming from me, who's a huge Michigan State fan, he is a very dumb quarterback. Like, this is the guy who took a knee, I think it was, when they had no timeouts, and just ended the half when they were on, like, the opponent, I don't know, 10-yard line or something. They could have easily picked points.
He has had 6 interceptions on the year, and he's taken about 8 sacks. I don't know if 8 seems a little high. I just don't know where his awareness is.
Makes good throws, and he makes just the worst throws you've ever seen. So I have a good feeling about this game. I think, since we're at home, I think we've been playing well at home lately. I think Kirk Cousins is bound to make a couple stupid mistakes, and I think even if he shreds our defense, for the most part, I think we might make some plays, since, like we have been doing recently.
Well, I think the good thing is Jordan Reed's still out, so they'll dodge him.
Maybe. I thought I heard a report that he's getting better.
He had a concussion, so, I mean, he could come back at any point.
It looked like, from what they were saying, that he might be ready, but we don't know for sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, what other than that, like, let's look at their weapons. So they got DeSean Jackson, Pierre Garçon, Vernon Davis.
To me, like, their offense doesn't even matter. They're going to succeed. That's what my mindset.
That's true.
My mindset is, will this offense continue to play mistake-free football? And if they do, then the Lions are probably going to win. If they don't, they're probably not. I mean, that's kind of...
That plus, how is Washington's defense going to be?
I don't know how they looked all year, but, man, they really did a fantastic job of shutting down Philly's offense last week. Like, they completely dominated them. I think Carson Wentz had 28 passing yards in the first half on 8 attempts, which is, I mean, he's been killing it this year, so that's pretty shocking. But I'm a little worried, but I don't think they've really faced a deep or an offense like the Lions yet, so I'm hopeful.
I don't think they have, and I think I'm like selling a little bit on the Eagles, to be honest. Like, Carson Wentz looks a little more shook than he used to be. Absolutely. It's interesting to note that, again, I'm looking at last week's DVOA numbers, but they were dead last in rush rank in defending against the run game. So I don't know. Maybe we get the Lions get Dwayne Washington back, and maybe they can actually run on the ground.
Or hopefully they get Theo Riddick back.
What's going to happen when they put Josh Norman on Marvin Jones, though? You think they're going to put Josh Norman on Marvin Jones or on Golden Tate? Oh,
we'll be fine. He's overrated.
Yeah, because the Panthers are doing so great without him.
Yeah, but Josh Norman hasn't been doing well without the Panthers either. So,
He's defended 8 passes. So, I mean, so he's only got 1 interception, but he's got 8. He defended 8 passes. I'm just saying, like, still, though, what happens? Do you think he will be put on Golden Tate or Marvin Jones? Because that's kind of the trick with this offense. It's like,
there's too many weapons.
You put a corner on one guy, and all of a sudden the other is going to be fine.
With that Redskins defense, too, he doesn't shadow anybody. So he's just going to be guarding whoever's going to be the right side wide receiver.
Yeah.
Okay, that's true.
I don't think he'll... I mean, they didn't have him shadow Antonio Brown, and there was a bunch of talk about that. And, I mean, he wasn't following Odell Beckham around the field either, so... It doesn't really matter, I don't think. I mean, say they decide to start shadowing Marvin Jones with Josh Norman, well, I mean, you saw what happened to, you know, last week. Throw the ball to Golden Tate.
It'd be really nice to have Eric Ebron back, too.
It could be. We don't know. I mean, we don't know any. That's the thing. There's so many.
I'm just saying it would be, because I'm tired of seeing Clay Harbor and Cole Weck.
Yeah. I think I just would like to see a running back that, you know, we had any sort of intention on starting.
Yeah.
And a tight end that we've heard of playing.
I think that's a bit.
And that's.
Go on.
I was just going to say, that's the thing. There's so many injuries with this team right now, and so many people that seem like they're on the verge of coming back. Without any sort of injury report to go on, you know, recording this Monday night, I don't know what to expect. I don't know what lineup to expect. We could even potentially see, you know, John Bostic this week, because it's been 6 weeks since he's been on IR. Josh Bynes is technically eligible to rejoin the team if the Lions want to re-sign him. Brandon Pettigrew, IR, could come back this week. Who knows?
Yeah, could be getting healthy at the right time, but we'll see. I think that's about it. We should probably leave it there and we move on. We've got a very special occasion to mark in the next segment. We're also going to be doing Rage Corner and Wally's World. Ryan, I have been told, has a very good Wally's World this week. And we also need to celebrate this momentous occasion with him. So stick around and we'll be right back. Welcome back again to the Pride of Detroit podcast, PODcast. Before we get into Rage Corner and Wally's World, we need to take a time to mark a momentous occasion in the history of pop culture. As you know, we are a Lions podcast, but we're not just about the Lions. And we like a lot of things, and we tried to tease this a little bit last week. I don't know how many references we got in, but the world 16 years ago changed completely. The world of music. Ryan, do you want to take it away from here? You want to explain to the people what this date is about? We're recording on Monday, so obviously it's going to be coming out the next day, Tuesday, but I want to talk about this.
You can still celebrate on Tuesday the seminal release of, I mean, I think inarguably Limp Bizkit's most perfect piece of work, Chocolate Starfish and the Hot Dog Flavored Water. Their third studio album. It debuted at number one on the Billboard 200. It sold over 1 million copies in its first week. Find me another album that can do that. I mean, it was even listed in the book 1001 Albums You Must Hear Before You Die. So if you have not heard this album yet, Don't go dying anytime soon, because this is 75 minutes of new metal that you cannot get anywhere else.
We're kind of joking here, but at the same time, we need to make it but we need to make it also clear that we are not just ironically, but truly, truly love Limp Bizkit.
I'm just enamored with the entire dynamic.
We all own this album in some form or fashion, correct?
Yes, I have it on MP3. Yes,
I had an actual CD copy of it back in the day.
I used to. I have no idea where it went, though.
I did, too.
Yeah, I lost a lot of my CDs.
That's the very first explicit album that I ever bought.
I was going to say, Alex, you said you did have it at one point, but now you just don't really know where it is. Well, that just describes Limp Bizkit.
Exactly. There you go.
But that was the whole reason we got back into Limp Bizkit, because we were looking up, I think, what was it, about 10 podcasts ago? We were looking up where he was, and we found out he had done like a new album a couple years before, prior, including a collaboration with a guest spot with Lil Wayne on it.
Well, yeah, Limp Bizkit is signed. I'm not sure if they are signed any longer, but they were signed to Young Money Records.
Look, we love Limp Bizkit. We love Fred Durst. And I'm not saying this with, a lot of what I do is irony, but I'm not saying this ironically when I say Fred Durst kind of really changed the game for both rock and hip hop, and more than anything, probably I'll say for both, because I think he really changed the way rock was going in the 90s. Probably not for the positive, but up until that point,
no, it doesn't rock anymore with him.
No, who was it from Rage Against the Machine who said that basically Limp Bizkit like just completely destroyed our entire movement where rock was
probably
going?
Probably either Zach De La Rocha, or it could have been, I don't know why I'm blanking on their guitarist right now because he's incredible, but
Tim Comerford. It was Tim Comerford who said this. He later walked it back, but
why would you walk it back? Are you afraid of Fred Durst?
I don't know, man. Yeah, I guess. I don't know. But yeah, no, he said it. Tim Comerford said about Limp Bizkit, "I feel really bad that we inspired such bullshit." And it's kind of true. You know, where it was in the 90s with rock, it was grunge. And then Rage Against the Machine came along, and it's like, okay, they made it work. They combined hip hop and they combined rock, and they made it politically relevant. They had this great, great protest music, which, by the way, still goes on. Like, Rage Against the Machine's out there touring with Chuck D as Prophets of Rage.
Well, I mean, and then which I'm pretty sure Zach De La Rocha was off fighting in Argentina or somewhere as part of the rebellion army. I mean, they were really about the life. And that's the thing, though.
They were about the left. Yeah.
Rage Against the Machine was a band that formed so early in the 90s, and they didn't really get any traction until like the mid to late 90s in terms of their popularity.
No, it was kind of like a Velvet Underground scenario.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it took them time to, you know, to really be like appreciated and for their music to, you know, kind of resonate with everybody. Whereas Limp Bizkit came on the scene and their entire claim to fame was, let's just be as lewd and crude as possible. We understand what's going to sell. So let's give everybody what they think they want. And then you end up with all music writer Stephen Thomas writing that Durst's self-pitying and the monotonous music give away that the band bashed Chocolate Starfish out very quickly. It's the sound of a band determined to deliver a sequel in a finite amount of time.
I mean, it really was like, considering how left Rage Against the Machine was, this was kind of the capitalist answer to just the disposable music answer to nu metal. And that's what happened with nu metal after that. It was Limp Bizkit. Like, they just wiped Rage Against the Machine off the map with what they had between this album and Significant Other. And that's why I say it was important, because they completely changed where rock was going. Not for the better. Definitely not for the better, but they changed it. They grabbed that bull by the horns where rock was going and steered, like, they killed nu metal before it even got here.
The thing that confounds me most about Limp Bizkit is that they have all the makings of a one-hit wonder. Faith should have been their first and last hit. But I don't know how they resonated beyond that, because Faith itself is the most like stereotypical like faux metal song in that they're taking this slow poppy song and making it all like hardcore and that, you know, that happens all the time for every metal band does that. And somehow it resonated enough for this band to not only get a second album, but a third and a fourth and whatever they're on now.
So, but I liked Chocolate Starfish over Significant Other, because Significant Other to me was a little raw, but then like, yeah, it Chocolate Starfish did feel rushed, but at the same time too, it's such a complete, it's a complete universe of what Limp Bizkit is, right? Because this was the album that had Roland. This was the album that had Boiler, which was like, I'm sorry, I bring up Boiler a lot, but it is probably, you talk about the self-pitying things, but Boiler was probably like the most self-pitying. There was Take a Look Around, which was made into the Mission Impossible 2 theme. There was My Way, My Generation, Full Nelson. Like, this one had everything you would want for radio from Limp Bizkit.
I think the thing that just resonates the most with me about Limp Bizkit is just how artificial all of it was. Like, nothing about anything that Fred Durst did or said, he ever actually did. Like, this guy, like, talks about how he, like, skateboards and keeps a spray paint can to do some, like, graffiti tagging. You've never been about that lifestyle, Fred Durst. Like, you're just capitalizing off this, like, counterculture. It's emerging from, like, their, like, we see this, like, divergent path of, like, people who want to be like Nirvana, but don't really exist in that subculture, but they're kind of like you're getting off to the right a little bit, like you mentioned, Chris. And Fred Durst just capitalized on it.
Right. No, I remember Durst was saying he was like a fan of Nine Inch Nails, and Trent Reznor was like, fuck you. Because he knows what it did to the music at the time. Because like, yeah, like this is a guy who interjects everything with, come on, playa. And it's like, you've never been a player.
Well, this is the thing too, though. Fred Durst, like, he was the king of ad-libs. Like, I feel like he was doing ad-libs before a lot of other rappers were doing them.
He was technically okay. He was decent as a rapper.
Yeah,
he was the original Lil Jon.
No, but I'm saying that's kind of a cliche to speak about white rappers as technically sound. But I don't know, like, just. But again, I think you bring it up into how disposable it is. I think that's why we love it, because it is so cliched and so disposable. It's come through as the other side. It's like the auteur of disposable music.
Everything about Limp Bizkit was also about something else. Like in the Break Stuff video, like Dr. Dre was in it. I think Redman and Method Man were in it. Eminem, he was in it. Like, it was all about who they were with by association. Like, Fred Durst was always trying to say that he was, like, with Christina Aguilera, or he was with Britney Spears, like...
Or Ben Stiller.
Or Ben Stiller.
Ben Stiller, you are my favorite motherfucker.
I don't know. You know what? Just no, celebrate.
Like, no, what was it? Wasn't there a cut of Rolling that had DMX, Method Man, and Redman all on it? Urban Assault Vehicle mix.
Yeah, and Swiss Beatz did the production on it, and Exhibit is on this album too. Like, it's
insane.
Let's not forget
it was Undertaker. Undertaker's walkout theme for a while.
We finally did it. We finally brought up wrestling again. Okay. Yeah. We were doing so well. Now people are going to be mad at us.
Fuck them.
This is
fuck them.
They're not going to be mad about the 15 minutes about Limp Bizkit.
10 minutes.
But the 1-2 second.
The
reference
last thing I
want to
say is that it's Tuesday. If you're listening to this, might be later on in the week. Just give it a spin. Just listen to what the year 2000 sounds like.
A more innocent time. A much more innocent time. I'm sorry. I love this band. I hate them, but I hated them so much. But it just, at this point, my brain is so broken. I just can't do anything except just treasure it. Treasure it. Because as I said, it's a memory of a more innocent time.
Go back to a point in time when Bobby Ross was the Lions head coach and Gary Moeller was taking over for him in midseason.
Tied it in the Lions. Well done.
All right. The Rage Corner.
take a break?
Yelling!
Can you take a break?
I'm yelling at you!
Can you take a break?
Yelling!
Can I get my d*** sucked?
Can you hear me? Yelling!
Can I get my d*** sucked?
Yelling! Yelling!
Are you ready to suck now? Have you got it all out? Mad, ain't you?
Stupid!
Red face!
Listen!
Now you're calling me stupid?
Listen! Yes, I am!
This is Kangaroo Court!
You know what? You have a constitutional right to be a dumbass!
All right, Jeremy, I've got a note here saying you have rage.
I do, and I'll admit I got most of it out this weekend, but it's going to pop up again next Sunday, because every Sunday DeAndre Levy puts out an article on the Free Press, and every week it stirs up a whole bunch of shit from fans that are ignorant, or I don't know what they are, but it really makes me mad, because to me, DeAndre Levy is one of the better minds in football, one of the better people in football, and when he's healthy, one of the better players. So the knocks on Levy range from, you know, he doesn't want to play anymore. He's just riding on a free new contract, which is absurd if you talk to anybody who's ever been around him. You know, we had a couple weeks ago Stephen Tulloch talk about how this is the kind of guy who's going to fight through everything, try to get his way back on the field.
Like, what are
you have people
are,
saying that he? Go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, what are people expecting him to do while he's rehabbing? Right, like just sit in like a hyperbaric chamber and do nothing.
Well, and it's not even that he's talking out. It's people just think he's not trying. People think he's just kicking back, you know, going to Peru or wherever he goes and just, you know, riding on that free contract. That is not at all the type of guy that DeAndre Levy is, if anyone pays any sort of attention. And then there is, you know, the other people that are like, well, he shouldn't be talking about social issues. Why is he doing that? I don't want to hear that. I want him to play football. And Levy put out a very poignant article about that specific issue this week, saying, if you think I should just be a football player, you're part of the problem. Because I have this unique opportunity in this small window to make a little difference in this world. Because everything I do say becomes, you know, there's headlines. I get invited to podcasts. I get invited to do this. I get invited to do that. I get opportunities to sell t-shirts for, you know, domestic abuse victims. Why wouldn't he do that? Why shouldn't he do that? This window of opportunity is so small for a professional athlete that if you have the small opportunity to make a difference, which very little of us have that opportunity to make a huge, you know, tangible difference, why wouldn't you do that? And how could anyone be mad that his primary issue that he's going against is domestic abuse victims? How could anyone be against that? I don't understand it. And it really, really makes me mad, because if you want to say stuff about it, the way he plays the game, if you want to say stuff about the Lions defense, or, you know, even Jake Rudock, you can talk about how Jake Rudock is a great quarterback. I don't care. But if you disparage this guy's personality and his character, you're completely out of your mind, because this is one of the best players in the NFL.
I guess all I would add to that is, and again, you know, rose tinted glasses on the past and everything, but I'm just really wondering when we stopped. Like, to me, like when I look on records in the past of fans, I tend to get this image of people who care about like the personality of the players and what they do. And they're like fans of the players and respect them as full people. And today it's more people want players to be avatars of their winning. Like they don't live through the players anymore. They live through the teams. And if the team's not winning, they are personally not happy. And so everything revolves around that, but there's nothing else beyond that. If the team's not winning, if the player isn't contributing for the team to not win, then they should magically get better and help them win and win games. And I just, yeah, I don't know. I'm sorry. Like, if you think like that, you're just a shallow person.
Yeah. And that issue kind of came up when I talked with Eric Ebron, because he's such a positive person. He's such a happy person. You look at his Snapchat, you look at his Instagram, you look at his Twitter, like he's always very happy and very positive. So when the Lions are losing and they see him being all happy and stuff, suddenly like he doesn't care about the game. No, he's just got a different personality that tends to look at the optimistic side of things. Like, it's just ridiculous what people expect out of their athletes, just to be these robotic playing machines. Like, it really frustrates me.
Well, again, I don't know if that's like a new thing in sports. Is that a new thing in sports, or am I just misremembering the past? Has it always been this way where the only reason people care about the NFL is for their own personal happiness of the players providing them wins so that they feel good on a Sunday?
It's changed. It has evolved.
Well, it's hard to say. I think it has, too, because players' personalities were never as accessible as they are now.
Yeah.
So people didn't care, you know, what Terry Bradshaw was doing on a Saturday morning, or, you know, and they didn't have access to what he was doing on the Saturday morning because it was probably something weird and disgusting. Because he's Terry Bradshaw.
But I think they did, like, sports writers like reported on those players and what they like, not of course like the most disgusting things, but like, you know, they did kind of paint pictures of those players when you had, that was your access through the newspaper. It was like, okay, they interview today one of the Dallas Cowboys or something.
Sure, but, you know, a player through a reporter's eyes is a lot different than what you're going to get out of someone just taking a 5-second video of them singing in the car.
Eric Ebron. And obviously, I think the opening of fan perspectives have also meant that people who have negative voices, they can absolutely influence people about this stuff, too. So, but that's all I've got. So thanks a lot for that, Jeremy.
Mm-hmm.
Wally's World.
Where's Wally? Where's Wally? Did you say him? Where's Wally?
Where's Wally? Where's Wally?
What do we got, Ryan?
Well, it's going to be real short, eaten to the point. My dad does not like Ezekiel Elliott, and it has nothing to do with fantasy football.
Okay.
It has to do with his celebration each and every time he gets a big gain or a first down. Yes, this isn't a visual medium, but Jeremy Reisman is doing the I'm eaten.
Oh, the eaten thing. I love that.
Yeah, the eaten thing where he, you know, puts up the invisible spoon. Yeah, he puts the spoon up to his mouth and he starts eating and feeding himself. Wally was not a big fan of that yesterday. We were watching the Green Bay game, and it probably had something to do with the fact that he has Jordy Nelson and he thinks Aaron Rodgers is washed, but that's for another day and another time. But Ezekiel Elliott ripped off a big run, which he is known to do now, as he has over 700 yards rushing. Holy moly, can you imagine what happens when the Cowboys play the Lions? We've talked about this. Oh my God, everything's burning. But he hits that celebration, and Wally's just like, What makes him a scumbag for doing a celebration that's relatively tame?
Your dad's just mad.
Wally, this just in, Wally does not like the Edom celebration. I don't know if it's specifically tied to Ezekiel Elliott. I'll keep you guys updated whether or not another player does it, but
I have a theory. Maybe he thought he was making fun of Eddie Lacy.
when are the Steelers on national TV next? Because I would love to see Wally react to Antonio Brown.
You know what? He really enjoyed Antonio Brown when he did the jump on the goalpost and fall down. He was a big fan of that. Not a big fan of Ezekiel Elliott pantomiming eating food at an alarming rate. I don't know.
That would be awesome if Eddie Lacy did that, though. Let's be honest.
That China food. All right, I'll be right back, and we're going to take your mailbag then. I know this is going long, but we're having fun, and we're going to take your questions now. Okay, mailbag time. Favorite time of the year, favorite time of the week. You can send your questions to Ask POD when that post goes up, or you can send them to Pride to Detroit when we call for them. Sometimes we'll go to Detroit on Lion instead. That is Jeremy's account. You should follow him instead of me because he will actually talk about Detroit Lions. But
hey, and before we get into the questions, can we also do a quick call for action for some comments and some ratings of our podcast? Because no one's done either of those.
We need to start doing this at the start of the podcast. Yes.
Yes. But yeah, just leave a comment. You can say whatever you want. You can call out any one of us if you want to. Leave a rating. We'll mention.
No, you got to leave a good rating.
Yeah, leave a good rating, please.
You can call us out, but give us 5 stars.
Yeah. yeah. And whatever you say, we're going to respond to. We promise that we'll respond to it. So if you want us to shout out someone, if you want us to yell at someone, call someone a name, as long as it's in fairly good taste, we'll do it.
Look, it helps us kind of climb the rankings. We're getting up there. We're getting up there. I know we've been doing this for actually, I think more about a full year now, over a full year. Yeah. But it's still a relatively young podcast. We're still feeling ourselves out, and we're bringing you more content later in the week now, too.
I have no problems shilling for reviews or ratings, so I will shout out just about anything.
Hear that? You can make Ryan Matthews say anything.
As long as it isn't anything that any Bills fan said about Colin Kaepernick this weekend.
Oh, jeez. Oh, man. Let's avoid that.
Avoid please. Bills Mafia.
Okay. All right. First question off the bat here. Let's go to Jacob NL. So what is the biggest surprise 2016, be it stat or performance? He gives a few examples here. He's talking about Marvin Jones, 500 plus yards, Kerry Hyder's 5 sacks, Stafford's rating, Terrell Austin's defense. What do you guys think is the biggest surprise so far?
I think we're going to have 3 different answers.
Who wants to start? Let's start with Jeremy. What do you think?
I think it's probably Kerry Hyder. I mean, I didn't even expect that guy to really make the team, let alone have 5 sacks. I don't think he's as good as necessarily that stat suggests, but he actually is getting better. And he actually had more snaps than Ezekiel Ansah in his comeback this week. So I'd probably go with Kerry Hyder right now.
I think it has to be Marvin Jones. I know Kerry Hyder, he was on the bubble of even making the roster, but there is no way I would have expected this kind of production out of Marvin Jones up to this point in the season. I mean, he's a guy who he might very well get over 1,500 yards receiving.
That'd be insane. That, like, you lose Calvin Johnson, you get a guy who's more productive than he was last year. And everyone thought the Lions overpaid for Marvin Jones, too.
Yeah, and he's got 529 yards on 29 receptions. That is some big plays right there.
Yeah.
I was going to say Kerry Hyder, and then Jeremy said that, and then I was going to say Marvin Jones, but so I guess I'll be different, and I will say Terrell Austin's defense, only because I didn't think we were going to be that great without Levy, assuming that Levy was going to be gone. We kind of, like, in training camp, everybody was talking about how deep the D line was. I know we didn't have any stars, but we had, like, those rotational guys that we keep rotating in and out. And I thought that, I guess, our defensive line was going to be a lot better. We would create a lot more pressure, which would have made our defense better. But I did not expect us to be, like, 32nd in DVOA by this point in the year and making Case Keenum look like a freaking all-pro quarterback. So I think any of those 3 answers are good ones.
All right. I'm sorry. I don't have an answer for this. I'm still wrapping my head around the season. I won't know what to think about this until we probably reach, like, after week 8 or something, like the halfway part of the season. Then I'll start thinking a little more about this. Okay. Jack H. Lions need to make a move to get some defensive health. Who would be worth trading and for who? And he thinks Kirksey for Ebron sounds like a good idea.
Fuck off.
You can't trade Ebron. He's injured. He has to pass a physical.
Yeah, you were doing this on Facebook Live yesterday, Ryan. People wanted to do the same thing, but for, like, DeAndre Levy. They're like, get rid of trade DeAndre Levy. And it's like, no, you can't do that. That's not how this works.
Hey, why can't we trade all of our injured guys for good players?
Well, and not only the injury thing, like, this doesn't happen in the NFL, and there's a good reason why it doesn't, is because you can't just add a guy in the middle of the season and expect him to be a huge upgrade over everyone.
Not only that, but has it only been, like, 8 days and we've completely forgotten how good Eric Ebron was when he was healthy?
No, not only that, but like, who does this team have right now that can do anything that Ebron does? Because the answer is nobody. Ebron can probably block better than all the tight ends that are healthy right now. And that's not even what Ebron does.
And to be honest, when going back to kind of what you said, Jeremy, when have you ever seen a player for a player deal that has ever mounted to anything in the NFL in the midseason? I can say I've never seen it happen ever.
They do those NFL Network trade deadline countdown things every week. And you know what happens? They just trade futures. They never do player for players. They are always just trading. If anyone does any trading, it's like, okay, give us this bottom of your defensive line guy, you know, role player guy, and we'll give you a fifth rounder in 2 years or something. There is never anything that happens midseason. There's never, like, the trades don't happen midseason. This isn't baseball.
It's not basketball.
Especially big names, too.
Yeah. Remember the biggest trade of the trade deadline last season was Vernon Davis, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Going to the Broncos. Yeah. Whoop-de-doo, Basil. What does it all mean?
I understand that this team seems very lopsided and that the offense is really good and the defense is really bad and the Lions should do something about it. But the answer isn't break up the one thing that's working. It's not. And it's not like this team is that deep on offense. Like, sure, they've been getting by on their third and fourth string running back, but it's not like the running game has been that great. And who do they have at wide receiver if any of the top three go down? Because none of them are active. Do you really want Andre Roberts to be like taking over Marvin Jones's role injury happens? So
Trey Roberts bringing in Jay Lee, baby.
Right. The thing is, if you want this defense to improve, you've got to hope that the return of John Bostic, the return of DeAndre Levy, Ezekiel Ansah getting a little bit more healthy, all that kind of contributes to this defense getting better. Because guess what? There is no savior coming.
I'm sorry. I just don't think
it's those guys.
Even with those returns, I don't think the defense improves appreciably until next year.
That's probably true.
I'm sorry. There's just some things you cannot fix midseason. You just can't. You can't. We knew what the problem was with this defense going into the season, and it's getting exposed being worse than it is. And guess what? You can't do anything about it. This is you've got to learn a little helplessness. You can't fix everything. I'm sorry.
The one counterpoint I would give to that, though, is that the Lions defense looked bad in the first half last year. Not quite this bad, but definitely bottom five in the league bad last year. And they turned things around to make them kind of a more middle of the road team. And if they can do that this year and maintain at like a 500 level until that happens, they can make a run.
Can I just say this, though, about that defense being bad last year? There was an element to that we don't have this year, and that was Joe Lombardi's offense stinking it up, constantly going three and out, and basically making sure the defense was out there for like 40 minutes in a game and just getting gassed. Like, you, like, when your defense is exhausted, they can't do anything.
That's a fair point.
Like, yeah, I mean, you don't have that this year. Like, I think it's been like, what, how long was the defense? How long was the time of possession for the offense against the?
I don't know. It was probably pretty even because first half was ridiculous. There was like four drives in the first half.
It was equal is what I'm saying.
Right.
Like,
right.
I just want to know why we're so much worse than we were last year, though. Like, what has really changed that much? Like, why is the defensive line so much worse? Why is Ezekiel Ansah playing like shit when he is healthy?
Lions had 32 minutes of possession.
I have your answer, Alex.
Yeah.
Steven Tulloch isn't on the team anymore. And he was my defensive player of the year last year. And I'm not saying that I'm wrong. I'm just saying that some things have changed. Stop. And one of them is Steven Tulloch.
So you think the leadership, maybe?
Probably.
All right. Next question. You guys are pissing me off.
Living it up.
Not really. Living it up. Joseph R. Sweeney 5. What is your favorite post Lions game activity? So, like, after the Lions are done, after, you know, they've won or lost, what do you do? What happens?
My favorite thing is watching Ryan Matthews throw down on some Levy haters on Facebook Live.
I had so much fun doing that.
Those are fun to do.
At first I was aggravated, and then my aggravation turned into just kind of like joy. Like, I was having fun. I was having a good time.
You guys, if you don't watch our Facebook Lives after the game, which usually go up about 30, 45 minutes after the game, you should really be a part of it because it's fun. You kind of get to know us as individual people a little better, and you can also ask us questions. interact directly, which you can't quite do with this
medium.
You
can watch us call people out. Like, yeah. You can watch Ryan.
We have no problem doing that.
You can watch me drinking a Moscow Mule with someone asking me, "You are so dumb. Have you ever played football?" You can see me respond to that. We love our Facebook people. They're a hoot. No, besides that, I mean, other than watching like the afternoon game, I don't know. I'm kind of win or loss. I'm kind of in the mood for more football a little bit, I guess. Sometimes I go out to this Mexican place in town and just start getting tequila. I don't know. To be honest, I'm just so busy with what we do on Pride of Detroit. I just kind of don't think much about what happens after the game.
Yeah, it's kind of become like a running joke with the people that I'm close to, either like friends or family. If it's a 1 o'clock game, there's just a bubble that I live in from 1 to 4:30, and I can't be reached. Like it doesn't matter if there's a F5 tornado coming through Michigan. After the game, though, it depends on how emotionally drained I am from the game. What about you, Alex? What do you do?
I don't do much. I just hang out and watch Red Zone. That's about it.
I mean, some days I kind of feel like I need to get away from football, but I really don't have anything else to do. Like, maybe I'll play a video game or something. I've been really into Hyper Light Drifter lately, but yeah, I don't know. I don't really have a go-to thing.
I will once we get a Red Dead Redemption sequel.
Hell yeah, man. Hell yeah. Oh, shit. I'm so hyped for that. Rockstar, you bastards.
I just want Kingdom Hearts 3, and it's never going to come out. You know, easy, you love Kingdom Hearts.
Loser.
All right, we're going to take one from Twitter here. Mike Holman. I think we've had this question before. Have you had this question before? If you could clone a past Lions player, aside from Barry Sanders or Calvin Johnson, put him on the current team, who would you choose?
Porsche?
I'm going to go with Chris Spielman.
That's a good choice.
Especially since I've been hearing him in the... could you imagine Chris Spielman on color commentating about linebacker clone Chris Spielman?
He'll definitely be able to tell the difference between a running play and a passing play.
My favorite line from this past week was, "Well, it's simple. The white pants are beating the gray pants off the line."
He's on color again next week.
Are we getting all these Spielman games? Like, I'm gonna be honest. He's fun to listen to, but he's not really that good.
He was freaking awful during the preseason.
He growled.
He's very polarizing. I actually think most Lions fans like him.
Of course they do.
They just like him. They don't. I hope they don't like his actual announcing.
Dude, there's
ability.
So many people who still wear Spielman jerseys to games. There absolutely is. He is one of those. Like, besides like Sanders, Johnson, and Stafford, he probably has like one of the more worn jerseys out there to Ford Field.
It's true. If I could clone a Lions player from any time and put him on the team this year, I think it'd be Eddie Drummond.
Alex?
You're not going to make him explain? You're not going to hold his feet to the fire with that
I'm
one?
Not. I want
to
get away from it.
Yeah, give me Ndamukong Suh. Next question.
You want to clone Ndamukong Suh while he's still playing?
Joey Harrington.
I wish we played the Dolphins and Ndamukong Suh would have to at least be on the same field as other Ndamukong Suh.
We're moving Ndamukong Suh to offensive tackle to make this happen.
Oh, wow. That'd be fun.
Why not?
Jeremy.
I said Robert Porsche. We need a good pass rusher. Okay.
We're getting a lot of questions about Terrell Austin this week. So he says, Bruce Walker says, "My son..." includes his son's Twitter name, "was at the game and says the defense appears even worse in person. Can Will Austin fix this, or is this scheme, quote unquote, solved?" First off, I want to say, like, if you know who your son is on Twitter, look, my mom and my family follows me on Facebook. I wouldn't let them see anything I'm doing on Twitter. I wouldn't. I absolutely wouldn't. I got on Twitter to get away from my family. This sounds awful.
This sounds like confession.
This just
a little
really
bit
sad.
for Terrell Austin's defensive scheme, has it been found out or has it been figured out? I don't know. I think that
defensive schemes don't really get found out.
I don't think that happens. I think it's just a matter of, can you generate pressure? And the Lions just aren't generating any pressure with their front line. You know, it seems like, you know, going all the way back to the 2014 team, you know, when Austin came on the scene, his teams were all about generating pressure up front with the, you know, with the front four. And his team just hasn't done that this year. You know, he's had to rely on guys like Kerry Hyder, who we didn't even expect to be on the team. You know, we were hopeful that Devin Taylor would do something this year, but without Ansa on the other side, you know, how much can you really expect from him? Haloti Ngata now out? I mean, I know I don't want to make excuses for the personnel. I've always kind of thought, though, in some way that he doesn't deserve a pass because he needs to do the most with what he has. But it's tough to really generate any kind of a pass rush with the kind of personnel that he has.
Yeah, I've said a lot of bad things about Terrell Austin this year, but I think we're focusing way too much on Terrell Austin and not on the fact that we just don't have a whole lot of talent on defense. And you can run as many stunts as you want, you can dial up as many blitzes as you want, but if you just don't have the players to do these things, you're just not going to get results, plain and simple.
I guess. But I do think Austin deserves criticism for not getting the most out of players, the players that he does have.
No, I agree.
Like, you're not going to get an all-star lineup like 2014 every year.
Sure. Right.
You got to get the most out of the guys you can have, and these are NFL players. They're good enough to be in the league. They need to be able to do something, and they haven't done anything.
Okay, Cram9030 asks, does this win validate our preseason expectations? All the Lions wins have come by less than a single score, and so have all their losses. We are 500 in one score games, and you would expect more of the same going forward. In general, 10 teams tend to split one score games evenly. Can we expect the Lions to stay on their 7-9 or 8-8 pace? Will the in-up defense tank that? I had some other questions about this too, about Chicago, Tennessee. Can we play both these games again? So, like, I don't know. What do you think about, we kind of talked about this in the 500 talk, like what, where do you feel expectations are now with the team? I think I'm just going to repeat what we had in segment two, like, don't get your hopes up.
Yeah, I'm basically where I've been since the beginning. I was probably a little bit more down on the team when they were 1-3, but my prediction hasn't really changed. I think this is somewhere between a 6-10 and 8-8 team, and I think the reason for that now, maybe that wasn't my reason at the preseason, is that the defense is really bad and Stafford has had to be perfect, and there are going to be games where he's not perfect, and it's going to be a game like the Bears game where it's going to get ugly. So, you know, Stafford can't keep up this pace forever. I think he'll definitely put up stats that are going to be probably very near his best, if not his best year, but it just can't continue. The Lions can't contend for a title if they're playing like they are right now, and we should expect them to be maybe a borderline playoff team, but to me, just underneath that level.
All right, we got a couple questions in here from Jeremy's personal account. Actually, one comment and one question. I'm just going to read the comment real quick. Nate Washuda says, I just wanted to thank you for finally purchasing an Aaron Rodgers jersey. Thank you, Jeremy.
No problem. I'm doing my part.
Doing your part. The question comes from Omnimon. Is that a Digimon? If given the opportunity to eat lion meat tacos, sustainable, organic, legally acquired, all on the up and up, would you?
Hell yeah.
I like to try new things. Why not?
I'd try that. I'd try that because I'm a weirdo. I eat, like, you know, you've gone out with me, Alex. I eat weird sushi, but I don't know. From all I understand, like, mammalian predator meat is, like, really bad. It's like,
I'd imagine it's pretty lean, right?
It's not even lean. It's just, it doesn't apparently taste right. Like, compared to, like, game meat or, you know, grass fed or even like something like, you know, a reptile, like alligator. Alligator tastes good. I don't know if lion would taste good at all. I imagine it'd just be very chewy, maybe flavorless or.
There's only one way to find out, Chris.
I'm not going to kill. I'm not going to kill a lion just to eat its meat.
It's
It was legally acquired. Here's the key to that question. It's asking if I want to eat tacos, and the answer is almost always yes.
That's true. It would be a small taco. Nice.
Soft or hard shell?
Soft, but it's got to be a corn. Soft corn.
I'll take flour, too, but I do prefer
soft.
Wait,
are soft shell taco sandwiches?
Oh, shut up. All right, might as well take a couple more questions here. Fez99, do you think the players lose respect for the coach when he doesn't call out opposing coaches? So he's referring to the fact that Jim Caldwell didn't really call out Jeff Fisher, the Rams, for, you know, bum rushing the victory formation. And he's citing Tom Coughlin calling out Greg Schiano when he did that stuff, which, again, I'm sorry. I think we idolize Tom Coughlin a little too much. Like, people love to talk about how disciplined and how stern Tom Coughlin is, but his Giants teams were, I'm sorry, they won two Super Bowls, but they were pretty shit. They weren't disciplined at all either. I don't understand the canonization of Tom Coughlin. I don't think he was a good coach.
Well, you want to talk about a coach who got the most out of his talent. I mean, for teams that ended up, you know, 9-7 and backing their way into the playoffs and then winning Super Bowls.
But I always thought they had, like, good defensive talent that they always got.
They did. So they did. I mean, O.C. Umeniora, Michael Strahan, all of those teams had, you know, big-time defensive players. But, you know, at the end of the day, Jim Caldwell just isn't wired like Tom Coughlin. And you know what you're going to get with Caldwell whenever he steps up to the, you know, to a press conference. It's check the report. It's some other coachisms, and it's try to get out of there as soon as possible. It's just how he's wired. And then, you know, this specific situation, why does Jim Caldwell have to call out anything that Jeff Fisher's doing? It looks bad on the Rams. You know, I don't think Caldwell has to do much of anything to shine a light on a team that he's already played. The game is in the past. Why pay any attention to it? Let Jeff Fisher let him explain his 7-9 bullshit.
I think there's a chance. Sorry, I was just gonna say I think there's a chance that there are some players that would rather hear Caldwell stand up for his players, especially if someone got injured on a mildly dirty play.
I think he does that behind closed doors, though.
Maybe. And the thing is, if you've bought into Caldwell already, you're going to expect him not to say anything. So, you know, if Caldwell has the locker room, this is not going to change.
Yeah.
That. Yeah. I don't think he's losing anyone over what happened with Jeff Fisher. I just don't. I know people are trying to find any hole to poke in this idea that, you know, the players like Jim Caldwell because they want to imagine that Caldwell is losing his grip or whatever, but I'm sorry. I just don't see it. Okay, we got a question here about Josh. I'm going to get these names completely mixed up. John Bostic and Josh Bynes. Did I get that right, Jeremy? Did I not screw this up?
You got it. You nailed it.
Okay, so on Bostic, this is from Jacob. This is another question from Jacob NL. Many people, including myself, love trading for Bostic and thinks he will be a solid backup starter. We haven't seen him play, but will the defense improve when he gets back, or will we see Kyle Van Noy subbing for Levy? And will they sign Bynes if he's healthy?
I hope they sign Bynes.
Well, does playing John Bostic mean that we won't have to see Thurston Armbrister on the field special teams?
Why do you think he's playing like Antoine Williams? Why do you think that is?
Antoine Williams wasn't playing that well, man. He's a rookie, so he has an excuse.
Maybe.
Well, I thought he did. I thought he looked good before the injury, and then he came back and played a little bit after the injury, and then he looked bad.
Yeah, he might not be 100%.
Yeah.
I don't really know what the Lions have in John Bostic. I'll be honest. I'm hopeful, but I'm not expecting him to be a world beater when he comes back. I mean,
did we see him play even in the preseason, or was it just training camp?
I'm trying to remember. I honestly think he got injured like second.
Yeah. Preseason, I think.
Second like preseason?
Preseason. Yeah. So, yeah, we just don't really know what he's going to look like. But I mean, the good thing is that we'll have more depth. That's really...
That's what you really need at this point.
The best thing we can hope for.
Just think about how desperate we are for linebackers. We are willing to concede Amir Abdullah for the rest of the season. Like, Amir, just take the year off. We need John Bostic.
Yeah.
And then Josh Bynes, like, I didn't realize this. He was a starter for the majority of last year.
And he's one of the better, like, linebackers in pass coverage too.
So
he had some good games last year.
The whole situation surrounding him is very strange to me because he, according to Justin Rogers, he only signed a 3-year injury settlement or 3-week injury settlement, which if he's only injured for 3 weeks, why did he go on IR in the first place? Unless the Lions are doing this kind of workaround thing where you can put him on IR, you free up a roster spot, then you cut him, then you can bring him back without burning a return from IR designation thing. But if he was truly only out for 3 weeks with this injury, that means for the past 4 weeks, someone could have signed him, but no one, you know, not even a peep from anyone. Now the Lions can, because there's a funky rule where you can't re-sign with your own team after cutting from the IR for an additional 4 weeks. Yeah,
probably because of this kind of stuff, though.
Yeah, I got a little interesting tidbit on Josh Bynes as well, since I still have the Pro Football Focus stuff here. Anyway, he actually played the most snaps last year out of any of our linebackers. He had a plus 4.9 grade overall. He did not have a negative grade in anything, including run defense, pass rush, pass coverage. Yep, he had a good year on 832 snaps.
All right, let's get to the last question here. Melvin2345. Describe this season so far using 3 3-letter words.
Jim Bob God.
I have one. Big wet mop.
Hold That's on. Pretty good.
Think about what you can do with a mop. Like, a mop is a really good offensive tool for cleaning up stuff, right? Like, you get them.
It's got a hard stick. You can hit someone with the other side of it.
You
got
to get the mop head super soaking wet, and then you have to wring it out, and then you can clean stuff up. It's good on the attack. But once you mop something, you have to wait a long time for it to dry up. So, like, I don't know where I'm really going with this, but in my head, it made a lot of sense. The Lions team is a big wet mop. Because they can be pretty effective, but at the same time, you just have to sit there and watch the defense, or you have to watch it dry up. There's not a whole lot you can do.
I like it.
Big wet mop.
Alex?
Big wet mop. I did not prepare for this, so I'm just going to say something that's fun. Big wet ass. I'm done. Jesus. That's the team. Yep.
I'm not sure.
Hashtag big wet ass. That's the hashtag for this episode.
Yep. That's the Lions, guys. Big wet ass.
I'm not sure I can make this in with 3 letters, but John Otto, welcome to the Matthews Bridge. Can you feel it? A digital generation. All right, stick around for a couple minutes and let this thing buffer out, because we've got a good
Ryan. Why didn't you do it, Ryan?
I don't know. I don't know why. Probably because I never want that to ever be on the podcast.
What?
Go ahead, Alex.
We were playing Overwatch, and you just had posted that outline, and we saw the favorite post game activity. Actually, no, I'm not going to say, because you still have the recorder on.
You figured me out.
Hey, so close. Guys, in other news, Michael Rothstein, and in something I never thought I would ever tweet, Judge Pitbull gave Calvin Johnson a 10 on Dancing with the Stars.
We love you, Michael.